From the National Urban League, this is For the Movement, a podcast that discusses persistent policy, social, and civil rights issues affecting communities of color. I'm Toni Wiley, Director of Advocacy for the National Urban League. This week's episode is a ladies' edition where we will focus on women of color and their ever-growing and ever-evolving role in politics and society. More importantly, we want to examine what are we gaining from our efforts. I'm joined today by Ms. Tiffany Cross, co-founder and managing editor of the Beat DC, and Ms. Joaquina Clanton, director of African American and Women's Outreach at the DNC. I'm happy to have them here as my guests to help us unpack and have a real sisters conversation about these issues. But before we begin, let's hear a message from Mark Muriel, president and CEO of the National Urban League.
I'm Mark Muriel, and this is your To Be Equal moment. The pending Democratic takeover of the U.S. House of Representatives marks a major turning point, perhaps far more significant than most Americans realize. For the last 2 years, the current administration has gone unchecked. Its signature achievement, a massive tax shift to benefit corporations and the wealthiest Americans, serves only to worsen income inequality and explode the federal deficit. The clear mission of the incoming Congress must be to not only put a halt to the administration's misguided agenda, but to advance an agenda aimed at reducing inequality, expanding opportunity, and enforcing civil rights and racial justice. The first bill unveiled by the new majority, a voting reform and government ethics package, is an encouraging sign. Among other issues the incoming House majority must address on day one are increasing the federal minimum wage and indexing it to inflation, strengthening and restoring the Affordable Care Act, a comprehensive and targeted infrastructure bill to create jobs, and protection for dreamers, young immigrants covered by Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, DACA. And I'd add another, a new voting rights bill that restores the damage done by many states and the Supreme Court to the historic 1965 Voting Rights Act. The most significant and impactful initiatives the new House majority could adopt, which includes much of the above, can be found in the National Urban League's comprehensive blueprint called the Mainstream Marshall Plan. In that blueprint, we address lack of opportunity and economic inequality in America's urban communities, big and small. Elements of the Mainstream Marshall Plan were introduced as a major legislative proposal last year by members of the CBC. The Jobs and Justice Act includes provisions for investment in public schools and infrastructure, a living wage for all Americans, restorative justice for ex-offenders, and tax incentives for hiring young people, veterans, and the unemployed. In an open letter to her colleagues, incoming Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi wrote, "It is my hope that as we deliver on the For the People agenda, lower health care costs and higher wages by rebuilding America and restoring integrity in government, we will do so in a way that addresses economic disparities in this country." The new class of Congress has also made integrity in government a top priority, supporting H.R. 1 in our Better Deal for Our Democracy Act. As the late Justice Brandeis said, "We may have democracy, or we may have wealth concentrated in the hands of a few, but we can't have both." We look forward to working with Speaker Pelosi and our colleagues on both sides of the aisle to restore integrity to government and create economic, educational, and social opportunity for all Americans. I'm Mark Muriel, and this has been your To Be Equal moment.
So ladies, welcome. I know that we want to get ready and jump right into the conversation. It's a very relevant conversation for right now. But before we do that, I would really like for you to give us a little bit of information about yourself and about the work that you're doing as it centers around women of color.
Well, I think I'll go first. Thanks, first of all, Tony, for having us in studio today. I think it is always good to come and talk to the folks who need to hear from us the most. You know, I think oftentimes we allow other folks to tell our stories. So it's always great when we're here to be able to tell our stories ourselves. So just a little bit about me. I serve as the Director of African American and Women Affairs or Outreach and Engagement at the DNC, which is the Democratic National Committee. Under that portfolio, I am in charge of our national African American women's tour, which includes organizers and elected officials, state party leaders, and a host of other influential Black women across this country. We bring women together to talk about issues that are most important to them, how we can be helpful in their pursuits in terms of organizing their communities and also electing more Black women to elected office.
Which is always fabulous. Thank you so much for the work that you do with Kenya.
Thank you so much.
And what about you, Tiffany?
So I'm Tiffany Cross, and it's an honor to be here with both you ladies. I run a political platform called The Beat DC, and we spotlight the intersection of people of color, politics, and policy, which is such an important intersection at this time, particularly as we're going into one of the most diverse Congress the country has ever seen. And when you look at what people are doing on a state, local, and federal level, we are the only national platform that spotlights that intersection. And so we talk about the important work that people like Okenya is doing, and we talk about the important work that the Urban League is doing. But I think it's really important to stress that we are for all communities of color. So not only do we talk about what's happening in the African American community, we also focus on the Latino community, the Asian American and specific Pacific Islander and Alaska Native community, as well as, did I get everybody? Asian American, Latino, African American, and Native American community, yes.
Yeah.
So we spotlight all communities of color and what they're doing in politics, and it's my honor to do that work at this time.
Well, I really appreciate it. I get it, and it's really informative, and it's fun to read. I feel like it's relatable to me.
We try to make it conversational, and so, you know, I think a lot of us in the work that we do, we try to tell you what you need to know, but sometimes we have to wrap it in some Beyonce for our people to pay attention,
so we
try to do that.
Put
at
it
the
information.
Exactly.
So, ladies, I know that the issue that we're talking about is one that we've had in our own sister groups. We've talked about it, whether it's in our personal lives, whether it's in politics, that women are carrying a burden. And I don't know if it's so much of a burden, but we are carrying a weight when it comes to the work that we do, whether it's in our community or in our families or in the political spectrum. So, what we want to talk about today is, are we getting what we need from that? We've gotten a lot of praise for the work and the mobilization we've done for recent elections, starting back to 2016 with the Trump-Clinton campaign. We've seen that in Alabama with the Doug Jones, Warren Moore. And we are also moving into spaces politically in leadership in our local. We had like 19 women judges in Harris County in Texas. We, of course, have wonderful women in Congress who are going to be representing us. But what are we getting out of it? We like the praise. We deserve the praise. But are we getting the progress that we need from that? So that's what I really want to start us to thinking about and talking about. How is this new dynamic going to shift the political focus and the power structure for women of color?
Well, that's a pretty heavy question. But I think it is multiple foes. So I think, you know, in terms of progress, I definitely think that is the case. You know, we can't, you know, talk about being at a table if we're not there, you know. So the first step is getting elected to be in those spaces. So I'm really excited about women like Ayanna Pressley and Johanna Hayes and, you know, looking forward to Deb Haaland and the things that they're going to bring in terms of this new wave of leadership that we're going to see in this next Congress. I think when you start looking at it at a more local level, there are advances that are being made, and progress takes time, and it may not be immediate, but I think we will see that. I think next year will be the telling factor of that, because that's when we've had the most successes that we've seen probably in either one of our times, you know, and since voting, really, in terms of people who look like us, who are there to serve us, who are young and they're energetic and they have new ideas and they've done other types of work. I'm appreciative to the work that our members of the CBC and other, you know, long-serving elected officials have given to our country.
Absolutely.
But I'm really excited about this new wave of leadership, particularly since it's so many women who got elected, right? Like, we had some stellar men like Colin and others who are now going to be serving with them next year, which I'm also excited about them. But it's something different about when you hear Ayanna Pressley speak and you can see her passion for this work, right? And you see yourself in the things that she's saying, and you just know you have an advocate in that space. And I think for us going into 2019 is about seeing our advocates now being in that space. Like, we've elected leaders, but now we're electing advocates for us who are willing to lead. And I think that's what I'm looking forward to, and I'm excited about that. And I think we will see the products of our labor shown in women who look like us.
So I'll echo on that. I think I agree with everything you said. I do think that women have shifted the conversation in a different sense. And, you know, I'm going to extend this beyond politics a little bit and just talk about women and hone in on women and talk about Black women. Mm-hmm. Because really, when you think about, when you look at politics from a political standpoint, Black women saved the Senate from an accused pedophile. Mm-hmm. And that's something to be celebrated. But it's also something to scratch our heads and wonder, why are we carrying the burden in this country the way that we are?
Absolutely.
And I think when you take a step back and look at the macro and just look at how Black women have always led in families, communities, and politics, it presents a question that I think that we've answered this election cycle. We're not princesses waiting to be saved. We're queens ready to rule.
That's
and you
right.
see that happening in this Congress, and you see it happening in the private sector as well. So when you talk about the newly elected members like Johanna Hayes, she's the first woman from Connecticut to represent the state, as well as Ayanna Pressley from Massachusetts. And so I think when you reference having a seat at the table, when there is no seat at the table, build your own table. Mm-hmm. And I think we're seeing that happen across this country. It is a little frustrating, though, when you talk about, have we seen the benefits of the work that we've done? I think we give ourselves the benefits. And to quote our wonderful former First Lady Michelle Obama, we all know that lean in, bleep, don't always work.
right.
And so when you have, this week there was an article that came out saying there's not a lot of staffers of color to staff some of these presidential elections. And I want to pull my hair out because the article is written on a false premise. That's not true. I'm sitting next to a woman right now who could run a campaign tomorrow if asked. And so when you look at the pipeline that's creating a workforce development, where is the opportunity like there? When we see time and again, the past 2 years, I'm sure you ladies remember all of the commercials we've seen that were a misstep. When we've seen the missteps taken out of the NFL, when they come out and give some sort of statement that's, you know, deemed disrespectful to women. The Dove commercial that made it look like white skin is cleaner and dark skin is dirty. Mm-hmm. When those things happen, we as Black women know that meant not only was there not somebody who was a part of that campaign, that had to pass five or six different desks where there was not a single person of color to tell you that you erred in that decision. And so I think when you ask, are we reaping the benefits, I would have to say no. We're a long way from that. We should not have to bear this burden as much as we do. And the other false premise that I think that Black women have to shout a little louder about is when you hear the conversation that Republicans are losing with suburban white women. Not really.
Mm-mm.
49% of white women across this country voted with the Republican Party. They were very loyal to this president and the party. And an overwhelming amount of Black women voted in the Democratic Party. So you have to ask yourself, where is the conversation going when you have that much of a divide in this country? And the country's more divided today than it's ever been.
Right.
So I think we have a long way to go, and I think we have to start in our on the local and state level talking about organizing and talk about strategies and tactics that it will take to make that leadership reach to the top.
Mm-hmm. I think you ladies have opened up like a waterfall of emotion right now with me, because one of the things that you said, Tiffany, that really resonated with me was that, you know, Black women are carrying the burden for things that should be all women's issues. No woman should want a pedophile, or no person should want a pedophile,
right. Mm-hmm.
Or an accused pedophile, or someone who's abusing their power in Congress. But yet and still, Doug Jones only won by a 1.6 margin in Alabama, which means a lot of people who are women just like us sat on their hands and did not vote the right way for their families.
Mm-hmm.
So to that, what I want to posture to you is, do you think, what is the physical effect? What is the psychic effect? What is the emotional impact of having to be a moral compass for a country that's really never had our backs as Black women? How do we then put ourselves in the position to be a moral compass mm-hmm. for those who have not treated us in
right.
a way that is moral historically?
I think we have to abandon the hope that somebody is coming along to save us. And that's across
mm-hmm.
anything. I tell mm-hmm. this to my girlfriends when we're sitting around talking, and the first thing everybody wants to talk about is who you're dating. And I'm more concerned about what are you doing? You know, we have abandoned that whole concept of I need a man to come along and save me. That is gone. Those are the thoughts of yesteryear. And so the same has to be applied to our well-being. And for people who are apathetic about this process, who sit on the sidelines, I just want to scream from the mountaintop every single day. You can either impact politics, or politics will impact you in a way that you might not like. And so I think women have to trust and own your own voices. There were so many first-time candidates who ran this time just because they did not like what they saw happening in the country. And a lot of times when people will ask me questions, or when I'm on air, people will say, you have access to information. I don't. How do you know these things? And here's the secret. I don't have any secret access to anything that people don't. If you can tell me the details between a beef between Cardi B and Nicki Minaj, then you have the same ability to know who your elected leader is. And if you don't like something, then you have the ability to change it. If you're not ready to run for office, you can write a check to a candidate. If you don't have any money, which, amen, I understand, you can canvass, you can knock on some doors, you can volunteer to call, you can call from home. They have programs now where you can sit right on your couch and make calls for a candidate from home. All of these things matter. And when you think about the long-term impact that this has. So we can talk about a lot of the state laws, and a lot of, you know, the state legislatures are Republican controlled, which does not always mm-hmm. Positively impact communities of color. And so when you think about those things and the power that individuals possess, it's something that can change. When you think about the Black Lives Matter movements and some of these sheriffs, those are elected positions. These are things that people have within their control to change. And what I've always tried to encourage people to do, you'll be surprised if you reach out to an elected official and say, hey, I'm going to have 15 to 20 people at my house on Saturday, and we want to hear from you and know what you're doing. Those people will show up because yeah. you're a potential voter. And if they don't show up, you should make it known that you invited them and they didn't show up. And I guarantee you somebody from that press office will call you.
Mm-hmm.
So I really think it's this gap between what we can do and what we know how to do.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people don't know their own power. And the fastest way to lose your power is to not know that you have it. And that's something that we all know is very prevalent among women, but particularly women of color. So I think I'm going to add some work to Kenya's plate because she's going around the country doing this important work. But I think that really would be a good idea to like a how-to, like what can you do? Because with Kenya, you talk to a lot of people who are probably already in the know, and you're trying to encourage them and you know, fire them up. But I actually think there's a lot of women who don't. Everybody should know who Kenya is at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a lot of women, unfortunately, who still don't. And she could be their resource of saying, this is what you want to do. Here's your one-pager on if you just, you know, Mary Jo at home sitting on the couch. Here are the things you can do. And I don't mean to add work to your plate.
I'm glad you actually said that, because that is actually a component of Seat at the Table. We've already put together that toolkit.
Excellent.
We have 2,000 plus ambassadors who are members and ready and activated. They were super active this last election cycle. Over 100 of them asked for ambassador boxes, which were like our T-shirts and our, you know, Black Women Lead and Vote and Run posters and, you know, commit to vote cards, organizing tools. I made a Spotify playlist for them, when it kind of music you need if you want to host a house party. Like, we really tried to make it a culture box
right.
for political organizing. And it was more than just about candidates. It was about issues. A lot of referendums were on ballots, particularly in Florida. And so we wanted women to have everything they needed, specifically Black women have everything that they needed to bring their friends together, from buttons to shirts to whatever, you know, whatever
resources. Where can we get the toolkit if people want to download
it?
Well,
now they're going to have to email me.
We will definitely make sure that we get that information.
I'll tweet it out, too. Yeah. Because I would love for people to have
perfect.
It.
Perfect. I'll definitely send that to you.
And people should follow. Yes. On Twitter.
Right. Well, definitely.
I love Tiffany Cross, y'all.
Promoter extraordinaire.
I know. But she's an amazing Black woman who's really passionate about the space that we're occupying. So I thank you for your voice too, Tiffany. I didn't get a chance to say that to you, but I really appreciate your voice in these spaces that we're not always invited in. But I wanted to go back to something that Tony had mentioned earlier when we were talking about Black women and carrying the burden and the responsibility of saving the world.
The psychic hold of that.
Well, and it's also for Black women, voting for us isn't just a right. It's not just a privilege. It's a responsibility. And we understand what's at stake and how our community has been disenfranchised since the beginning of time. When you think about, you know, Black women went from not having a right to vote to seeing Black men's votes be taken from them, and then now being given a right to vote, right? But now having to say that and savage that every single time. When we vote, we don't vote just for ourselves. We vote for our communities, you know, and that's inclusive of our spouses and our children, people who can't participate in that process. I just came off the roll from 2 months being in Mississippi trying to elect Mike Espy to United States Senate. And some of the folks that I met out on the road, one of my friends in particular, who had, you know, he didn't have a bad upbringing, but he had like a bad life, right? So he, you know, became a steward of the criminal justice system. And as a result, his right to vote was revoked from him. But he reached out to me and said, well, what can I do to help? Like, how can I do it? I can't vote, but what else can I do? Right. And so being in a position to say, hey, you have your CDL. I need you to drive this van and pick up these people. You know, you're not on the road. I need you out here getting folks to the polls, or I need you to share something on your Facebook page. People just need to know what to tip.
Or just to hear his story. So they were in the same situation to lose their right to vote.
And I told him, I said, start sharing your story. Like, sometimes we are victims of our society and of what society has placed upon us, and we forget that there are still other things that we can do. Even though you might have taken my vote, you haven't taken my voice, and what my voice could mean for you is to save you from the same thing that I got caught up in, right? And so I think finding those empowering moments, you know, that's from the Black man's perspective, but from the Black woman's perspective, for us, we do it because we have to do it. So we recognize what happens when we don't participate. If Black women just set it out,
right,
that would really turn this world upside down, and we can't afford it.
I'm going to push back a little bit, Wakenya, because my question is, why do we have to do it?
And we have to do it because no one else is doing it. Like, it is a responsibility. It's not a luxury.
But let's unpack that a little bit, because, you know, where do the men of color lay in this burden as well?
Yeah.
Because I see a lot of Black women, we've seen the pictures, very profound pictures of Black women putting their bodies on the line, marching, protesting for injustices against Black men, whether it be police brutality, the criminal justice system. But are they likewise stepping up to the plate, leading, not just participating, but leading and organizing efforts to disband disparities against Black women, like the pay divide or sexual misconduct or the Me Too movement? Are they stepping in and being our voice so we can rest?
Not in the numbers that they should be. No, not at all.
And I want to go back and just be clear about this. I said it is a responsibility. I didn't say it was our sole responsibility. So just because other people have abandoned the work still has to be done. And so we're not irresponsible beings, right? Even as young girls, whether we're taught or we just see a need and we feel it, it is just something that is innate within us. And it's not saying that it is right. It is just saying that is just the reality that we live in. When it comes to Black men, they do have a greater responsibility. And I won't sit here and make excuses for not participating. I think for them, it's trying to figure out how to do that in a way that doesn't compromise or put my family in danger. It is a very complex thing. It's not something that we can answer in 60 minutes of a show. You have to go into the psychology of the community, of Black people, of American people. Like, when you're talking about why white women are constantly voting with people who don't have their best interest in heart, who said they didn't have their best interest at heart? They just don't have our best interest at heart. That's a difference. So when white women go to the polls and they vote, they're voting for their households, right? Because at the end of the day, they still good, right? whether they have a job, they're not going to be challenged the same way that we are. And it's unfortunate, but it's the truth of the matter. A lot of them see us on surface and they want to have the idea of diversity. Oh, I got a black friend. I got an Asian friend. I got a, you know, Hispanic friend. We all good. We sister friends, right? No, because at the end of the day, when your sister friend needs you to stand up for them, I reflect back on Loretta Lynch. And this is a couple of years ago when Loretta Lynch was on the line to be confirmed, and you looked out, you only saw black women coming to her aid.
A sea of red.
It was a sea of, and I, yes, it was a sea of red.
Wait, looking at the Delta.
I'm a Delta, y'all, so y'all can know. No, it was a sea of red, but because we knew we had to be there, and there were some other sisters who stood with us, but when I looked out and I saw that, and I also saw what was happening with immigration and how people were calling on black people to come join us in that, and started making a correlation between African immigrants and Hispanic immigrants and saying, we all are part of this conversation. You're right. But right now, we're trying to protect justice in this country. And we need, where y'all? Because Loretta needs y'all too, you know? Yeah.
I just want to weigh in on that. I agree with everything you said. I think it is a necessary conversation to have about these black men, though. Yeah. Because when you look at the race with Stacey mm-hmm. Abrams, an overwhelming number mm-hmm. of black men voted for Brian Kemp. That's a conversation we need to have. We need, because one voting for Brian Kemp was one too many to me. I don't understand how that happened. Somebody who's actively suppressing the vote in Georgia.
Well, you had 13% of black men who voted for Donald Trump. So we keep living in this narrative that, you know, black people are monolithic. No, we're not.
Right.
When you start breaking it down and black men are starting looking at it from the economic side of it, and they're starting to say, okay, well, they're good for business, because most black men who can't find real gainful employment within institutions and corporations, they then look to start businesses. And so they start looking at those little issues. And
they're
also
fiscal Republicans.
They're fiscal Republicans, but also they're, a lot of us, a lot of them are still very much sexist.
Yes.
Let's get it together.
Let's talk about it.
This ain't like for play. This is for real. I'm from the South, like the deep red South. And
where are you from?
Mississippi, y'all.
Alabama over here.
That's Georgia right here.
So we got the whole girl.
Girls raised in the South.
That's right.
I have people in my own family who will say, you know, we voted for Barack Obama, and that pothole down the street, they got fixed. I'm always going to vote Democrat now. You know, or people say the opposite. And it's like, guess what? Barack Obama don't know nothing about that pothole. Mm-hmm. That is a local issue. People don't know the difference between state, federal, and local government. When you talk about black men and business and the economics of it, something that I found really disheartening is when you saw somebody like Colin Kaepernick put his livelihood on the line and risk everything. And then you saw his teammates walk right on that field every Sunday or Thursday or whenever games are played and did not take a knee. When you heard Jerry Jones say, anybody who takes a knee won't be on the field, I bet you my life savings, had every one of those players come out and taken a knee on that field, they all would have ended up playing on the field. Yes. They make the game. Yep. But there's a disconnect between people, particularly these young men who had nothing, and all of a sudden they have what they consider to be everything. Mm-hmm. They consider this $3 million they have in their bank to be so much, and they're afraid of losing it. But
freedom,
they're not free. Mm-hmm. And they are afraid of risking this big, huge pot of gold, and the white man came along and gave you a penny out of it, and you're so afraid of risking it. And so we have to challenge these black men. And they've been, listen, I'm not trying to dump on black men at all, because we have an amazing amount of black men, who Andrew Gillum, candidate in Florida, Colin Allred, who you mentioned, a congressman out of Texas,
or just the everyday men that we pass in our communities.
Happily, we live
up
in D.C. and we see amazing black men every day. So please, black men, don't misunderstand
we
what
love
I'm saying.
Y'all. We call us.
We love you sometimes,
right?
But we do have to challenge these men to be better, because they too have been failed by society. They have been taught to devalue their own lives when they go every day to a dilapidated school building with school books that don't work. Mm-hmm. When they live in communities with houses, when you hear about riots, they're not burning down the Ann Taylor or the Banana Republic. They're burning down these corner stores who, you know, sell liquor, and, you know, the empty, dilapidated buildings and community blight. This is what they see every day. And so it's hard to explain to that person why your vote matters so much, because they say, I've seen this community stay the same or get worse. I don't understand why my voice matters. So we have to do a better job of uplifting them and teaching them. And black women have done more better than the best that we could. And so I think some of these black men that we see who are doing well, they have to take more of a responsibility mm-hmm. too in reaching back and expanding their hearts and arms and their reach into some of these communities, which is challenging. Look, I could barely make it here on time. So I understand mm-hmm. it's challenging when you have an overloaded work schedule as is. Right. You're raising your own children. You're doing the right thing. Absolutely. And a black man who's doing the right thing, he has a lot of responsibility and weight on him too, because the community uplifts him and yeah. expects him to save, you know, marry you a good black woman, raise you some good black kids, children. Go to yeah. your good job and, you know, make a
help
lot of money.
Sister down the street.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So I do understand that, but that is by no means any excuse mm-hmm. for us to excuse some of the behavior that we see coming from our counterparts who we love and value and want to uplift.
Yeah. Right. And I think you said something else that was also important to point out, Tiffany. They are responding to what they see,
right.
what they view as success. So if they're driving through their, you know, a state that they've grown up their entire lives, and they go on the white, quote unquote, white side of town, and it looks better and it's ran by Republicans, and of course in their minds that's where they need to be operating,
right.
And so I think you hit on something there in terms of just like the psychology around politics too, which is something I would love to dig deeper in, but we don't have that type of time. You know, I think that is real. I think we have to start holding our leaders more accountable for our day-to-day situations, and also educating our people, particularly those of us with platforms, around how to get engaged at each level of government, and that's something that
from the school board to the White House,
but you know, the dog catcher, the commissioner, everybody, like, because honestly, that's where I understand the biggest disconnect is from the work that I've been doing over the last year with people, is that they don't know where to get involved. They have the energy, they're hungry for it, but if the only time that they're being asked to participate is in the presidential, right. You lose so many other things in the pursuit of that shiny object.
I do think too, is that we need to start at a cellular level with redefining what success means.
Mm-hmm.
To your point, Tiffany, success is not always making a lot of money, which is great.
Yeah.
I would love to make more money.
Mm-hmm.
We can do more with more money.
Mm-hmm.
But we also need to think about, how are we going to get liberation? Because
right.
liberation mm-hmm. is something that a cost has to be paid, but it can't be paid with money.
And it's a lot of people who make a lot of money who are not liberated.
Exactly.
Well,
the most bound people, the
right.
people who make a lot of money.
Right.
So we have to start changing the dynamic of how we talk about families of color, and what does it mean to be successful. And if that includes, you know, liberation and opportunity for your community as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a very important conversation that I think we need to have with our brothers. But we do appreciate you. I want to close on that.
We do love y'all, but y'all got work to do too.
That's right. Just to kind of bring our conversation full circle, I just want to talk about, what are some of your ideas of how we as women of color can collectively continue to climb and break ceilings and have that seat at the table or build those tables, mm-hmm. but also incorporating self-care? Because we do a lot, and we need to make sure that we're taking care of ourselves, but we're also setting healthy boundaries, whether it's in our families and communities, as well as in the political realm, because mm-hmm. we're asked to do quite a bit.
Yeah.
So how do we find that balance? How do we make sure that we continue to climb, we continue to grow, we continue to be at the forefront of everybody's conversations, but how do we make sure that we also get what we need from that and take care of ourselves at the same time?
For me, and I mean, something that I'm definitely still learning, but you have to prioritize happiness. Mm-hmm. I think we get so caught up in having that savior complex that we forget to prioritize happiness, right? Like, it's like, this is what I'm passionate about, but that doesn't necessarily always make me happy, right? Sometimes this work is hurtful and it could be a Debbie Downer, but it's work that needs to be done. We have to prioritize that. I got a text from my friend just on yesterday, and she said, why should I even continue to show up in corporate America if I'm here and they act like I'm invisible? I said, because you have a responsibility to keep showing up there, because you can't, if you're not there, then you're not there. But when you're there, no matter what they do, you continue to speak up. You continue to let your voice be heard in this space around issues that are important to you, and understand that they're not going to always recognize it, but they hear you. You know? And so I think it was a hard moment because it was like, I know exactly what she's talking about. Like, we've all been in spaces where we're happy to be there and then we're excited about, like, being able to weigh in and then someone discounts what you say. Right. And for me, I had to, one, find an opportunity to encourage her in that moment. Also help her understand that once we're done, we're going to take a break. You know, let's figure out some girl time because you need your girls in this space. And I think a lot of people forget that part too, because this work is always continuous, but find those moments to breathe and don't be afraid to step away from the desk. Mm-hmm. I think it's also very important for us. I don't even like going into like structured office spaces because sometimes I feel like it limits your ability to just to do the work and also find time for yourself. And I think we just have to be creative about how we find happiness and what, and understanding the things that actually truly make us happy and not conveniently happy. So I think that's also something that, you know, is hard to do, and it's, you know, it's easier said than done, but we just have to be intentional about finding spaces and finding ways to create happiness for ourselves.
So I'll say I'm on a journey for this myself. Yes. Self-care is self-love, and it's a hard thing to do. And in complete transparency, the first thought I have every morning when I wake up is usually something negative. I think, you know, like, I can't believe I said that dumb thing on air yesterday, or I can't believe I came home late and, you know, ate that last little bite of cheesecake I had. I don't even want to get on the scale, or, you know, somebody, you know, tagged me in a photo and ugh, I look so ridiculous there. I mean, these are just the thoughts that greet me every morning. And so I've tried to reverse course and wake up every morning and think about what I'm grateful for. Right. You know, I'm grateful to be here and have this conversation with you ladies today. I'll try to remember that tomorrow when I wake up. And that's so hard because you have to train your mind. And so then when you have all these negative thoughts and you go into a day where you're disrespected by so many people, from the people in your office to, you know, maybe friends, intentional or unintentional, frenemies, you know, people on Twitter, I mean, just, you know, rampant, where people are every day trying to poke and steal your joy, and how you can separate yourself from that and shield yourself from that. And also, just the news cycle itself is toxic. Yeah. I know for me, I don't have the luxury of being able to take a break. I'm mired in it every day. I write about it every day. And so I go through this range of emotions of being incredibly angry and infuriated to being just heartbroken and sad, particularly when we saw the children. The first step was children in cages. The next step was gassing children with pepper spray. Seeing those things, if you are a seeing, thing, thoughtful person, it's going to have some sort of impact on you. And so in those moments where you feel so low and you can feel like you're, you know, about to be living in Gilead. It's a Handmaid's Tale reference. Yeah. you know, in those moments, like, what can I do just to take a break so I don't drive myself crazy? And so for me, it's something as simple as taking a walk. I'm blessed to live in D.C., I think one of the most beautiful cities in the world. Yeah. So just walking, and I'll do some of the trails where you go and see the Mary McLeod Bethune House and the NCNW building. And I just think about the women who came before me and the sacrifice that they made. We're extremely blessed to be, you know, in the same city as the Blacksonian. What everybody else calls the National Museum of African American History and Culture. And
we
when
know
I go,
what you're talking about.
When I'm enveloped by my own history and culture, you know, it's twofold, because a part of me feels like, how dare you be tired? Because these women had significantly less than you and they made it work. And another part of me is, they worked so hard so you could stand here and take a breath and rest and get back up and do the work. Because when we are tired, when we get too tired, other people suffer. Yeah. So it is like the airplane was, let me put my oxygen mask on because I need a breath in this moment. And if I need to do that and step away and go behind some closed doors and shed some tears and think about the state of this country and get angry about it, I think about, you know, what my fellow Black women are going through and celebrate them. Whatever I need to do just to take a moment for myself, I really am trying to learn to do that every day. There are some days where I don't get a chance to do that. And it reflects. It suffers. Yeah. You know, my poor assistant might get the bulk of it. Or, you know, somebody who, you know, accidentally bumped into me and I'm just ready to explode. So it's so important. So whatever that thing is, if it's getting a manicure and a pedicure, don't feel guilty about it. If it's, you know, walking, doing something physical, do it. Don't, even if you're in the middle of the day at work, like, I'm just going to go outside and walk around the block, you know, one time, having a cup of tea by yourself, all of these things to just take a moment and breathe, because it's so important, particularly mothers, women who are responsible for families. I imagine that you always feel like everybody else comes before you. Mm-hmm. So, I just think we have to let go of feeling guilty about it. And I just want to close on this point that learning to view ourselves as beautiful, too. Mm-hmm. I think that society teaches us constantly putting these, you know, visions of beauty in our face that don't look like us. Mm-hmm. When we see Black men elevate standards of beauty that don't always look like us, it can eat away at who you are and your self-esteem. I know a lot of times I look through Instagram at my feed and it's a lot of duck face selfies, mm-hmm. you know, with a lot of filter and everybody.
That was Tony saying guilty.
Nah, I will take a mean selfie now. I will do that.
But my no. point is, you're building this empire of, you know, trying to present yourself as something. And it's like, you know, here, I boldly put a photo of me with makeup and me without makeup. And I just put hashtag sick and tired of the Photoshop. Shout out Kendrick Lamar. Thank you. But it's like, yeah, me and my naked face without sequins on. Mm-hmm. Just me. This is what I look like in the morning. I'm going to value this as beautiful because when I feel better about myself, I'm better to everybody around me. Mm-hmm. I celebrate my other sister's beauty. Mm-hmm. I'm not constantly comparing myself or other people. I can, you know, just look at people for in God's vision and the way that He created us without, you know, looking like I just left the Mac counter and celebrate that. And I really do think that impacts our self-care mm-hmm. when we think about ourselves as virtuous and beautiful and, mm-hmm. you know, as the women God made us to be.
Yeah, that's great.
I think we, one quick second, I just really wanted to thank you for first being very transparent with that. Mm-hmm. And I also want to say, I think it's very important that we also be naked in our emotions. Mm-hmm. Right. It's okay mm-hmm. to grieve. It's okay to be angry. It's okay not to be the strong Black woman mm-hmm. who's always composed, whose That's hair right. is always perfect and makeup is always tight. We need to be able to be vulnerable. We need to be able to be naked. And
Black Twitter, be kind. Yeah. You know, be kind.
Be kind to the natural beauty around you.
Yeah, Black Twitter, come on.
So, yeah, it's important to be naked in all our areas and really show our vulnerability because, you know, a lot of times we don't get the help and support. It's because we always present like we got it.
Yeah. Right.
Like we don't need you.
Right.
And we
That's
do.
That's true. That's yeah. very true.
That's very true. And I just wanted to say one thing around the self-care piece. There is beauty in saying no. And it's okay to say no. Mm. That is a big part of self-care is the active usage of the word no.
Please email me that every day.
Like the active usage of the word no. Like I literally almost collapsed because I was so tired. I got off a plane, went home, unpacked, packed another bag, jumped on a train, headed to New York, jumped into an event. And I was just running on fumes, got back to D.C., got a call from a friend like, last minute, she was like, I need you to come speak at this event. And without thinking, I said yes. But then as it grew closer and closer to time, I had to tell her no. Like, I just couldn't do it right. because momentum is just that. It keeps you going and going until it stops. And then you begin to crash. And at some point, you have to say actively, I'm sorry, I can't do it. I hate to let you down, but I promise you, you know, the next time I'll be more thoughtful and say, I got you when I really can have you. But you have to be okay with saying no. And then people who really love you and respect you will appreciate you for saying that and for knowing your limits. That's an active part of self-care. We like to your point, we present as superwomen. And so people treat us like that.
Correct.
Like, and we're not. We are human, and we have to accept that. And we are, even though we are powerful and gracious, but it's okay to, like, take time for yourself.
Right. Well, ladies, I have truly, like, this has been therapy for me.
Me too. Group therapy.
We needed this moment.
So I really appreciate you for joining me with this conversation. This will not be the last conversation that we have together. If we want to get more involved in the important work, to give you some support, brothers, listen up.
Yeah.
how do we do that? How do we get connected with Tiffany Cross? How do we get connected with Wakinya Clanton? How do we make sure that we are connected and we're supporting you in the work that you're doing?
Well, you can follow me on Twitter at Tiffany D. Cross. I beg and implore everyone to please go to the Beat DC and sign up. It's a quick read. It's a daily email. that just says, here's what's happening. And we're the only national platform, again, that highlights people of color
and politics and policy.
You don't have to be. We have tens of thousands of readers, daily readers, every day all across the country. I hear from people in San Francisco and Arizona. I hear from conservatives, Democrats. So a lot of people, celebrities, I won't say, I don't want to put anybody on blast, but there are, you know, certain entertainers and studios, executives at different studios who will email me or, you know, highlight our work. So I really would beg everybody to please see what tens of thousands of influencers are starting their mornings reading. And don't complain that there is nothing like this in existence if you don't read it. We do that a lot. You know, we complain about, you know, no black media. Well, you got to engage, you know, niche media markets for us to exist. So, yeah, you can follow me at Tiffany D. Cross on Twitter, Instagram. Follow my public Facebook page. And please, again, go to www.thebeatdc to subscribe for our daily rundown.
Thank you.
Awesome. And also, if you have any great stories, Tiffany's always looking for those.
That's
too.
That's right. So, please. Thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah. Yeah. Sister's plug. Yes.
Love it. Love it.
Well, if you're interested in staying connected with me, feel free to follow me on Twitter as well. It's at WJS Clanton. That's C-L-A-N-T-O-N. If you are interested in the work that I'm doing at the DNC or have ideas about how we can better engage with communities, please, please, please email me at ClantonW@DNC.org. That's Clanton, ClantonW@DNC.org.
All right. Well, thank you, ladies, so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having us. This has been amazing. This was great.
Before we get out of here, we want to recognize an Urban League affiliate for their work to advance our movement. On November 13, 2018, the Mississippi Urban League hosted a 2020 Census Solutions Workshop. The event addressed four issues that impact hard-to-count communities for the U.S. Census. The workshop discussed how community groups in Mississippi can assist with ensuring that there is a complete count in the state of Mississippi. There were very notable event attendees, including the Honorable Mayor, the Mississippi Department of Corrections Commissioner, and many, many others. So kudos to you, the Mississippi Urban League, and continue the great work that you do. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at NUL Policy for updates. Be sure to listen and rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, TuneIn, and Google Play. Kudos to our communications and policy team here at the Washington Bureau and our editing team at Podfly. And thank you for listening to the National Urban League's For the Movement.